Hi, I'm Jack Lyons, and I'm your host for episode 32 of the With Vikings podcast. If you want to catch up on any of our previous episodes, you can get us on all the main podcast platforms or wherever you normally get your podcasts. This week, we're going to take an alternative route. With many of our sports clubs and societies unable to return to action this year due to pandemic restrictions, we have no choice but to move away from our usual sports and societies award ceremony, which would usually take place around this time of year. In its place, we've decided to take a look back at some of the fantastic things which have been achieved by With Vikings sports and societies during its history. There's no doubt there have been some wonderful students involved who have come into WIT and while completing their degrees have brought clubs and societies to new heights. From musical society shows to Fitzgibbon and Ashburn Cup triumphs to Agsock barn dances to national record-breaking sprinters. We have also seen the rebranding from WIT clubs and societies to our current WIT Vikings sports and societies, not to mention the opening of one of Ireland's top sports campuses. We've seen it all. But on this podcast, we want to honour some of the staff who have worked tirelessly throughout the years to make sports clubs and societies in WIT the success it is today. Some have gone on to other roles within the Institute and some have moved to roles outside of Waterford, but all recall their time with WIT sport very fondly. We will have three parts of the podcast welcoming different guests for each section. And for the first, I would like to welcome three individuals who have all had a helping hand in clubs and societies over the years. And it would be fair to say without their hard work, sports and societies in WIT would not be where it is today. So without further ado, I welcome Robin Croke, Sheila O'Donoghue and Colin Bonner. You're very welcome to the podcast, guys.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you, Jack.
Colin, we might start with you. So we're digging into the memory bank here, but can you tell us when you began working in sports and societies in WIT?
I'm not sure about working, but I know I can tell you when I was employed by WIT. But yeah, look, I was a student from 84 to 87 in WIT. And in September of 87, I became the GA development officer. It was a new role that we were trying to promote. GA was very big in the, well, big enough in the college, and we felt there might be a role for a full-time person, and along with Munster Council and Eugene McKenna in the GA club, we came up with a role, a full-time development officer, and I suppose it was a pilot program that has taken off and been very successful and has shown that each college now has something similar in place. But that was kind of from 87 to 92, so that's my first kind of working period with it. And then the multi-purpose hall was built in 92, so I took over the running of that for maybe 5 years. So I had less kind of direct impact on sport and WIT. It was a big job in terms of managing the facility. It was open nearly 24/7, and everything from national concerts to RTE to national events. So that was a tough task, but I would have come back then in September of 97 back into the club and societies. That was a new role for me, and it was a new office in WIT. The Club and Society's office hadn't been present, so I did that for 5 or 6 years and then moved on again then into Access in WIT. So I'm more or less in WIT since September of 87.
Brilliant, yeah. And at the time, obviously, when you started and through the years from as you said there, 87 up until the 2000s, What did the office look like? Was there many in the office, and where was it situated in WIT? I'm sure it moved.
Yeah, it was very haphazard at the time. Really, there was no place for club societies to go. There wasn't an office based. They couldn't really get anything done. The students were kind of left in limbo. And to something that we spotted, we said we need to help the clubs and societies more. And the clubs and societies that we know of that opened up in September of 97. And the reason I remember that date is because Tip were playing in the All-Ireland final that Sunday, and I wasn't allowed to take the Monday off because the office was opening up on the Monday. Normally I take the 4 or 5 days off and drown the sorrows or celebrate, but I was back in at work that Monday and opening up the new club and societies office. And really that gave a whole central focus for all the club and societies. All the students that are involved, there was one place to come for the photocopying, for the fax, for the printing. You know, if they needed to, you know, I get all the fixtures coming through one central office, and we set up new guidelines for clubs and societies. And it really grew from there, from a small number of clubs and societies. It expanded to maybe, you know, where we are today, to 70 or 80 clubs and societies. So, yeah, it was a really huge change for the development of clubs and societies in 97. Because up to then, really, they had nowhere to go. There was a club society's finance council, but really all they could do was disperse the money, but weren't able to provide any other services to enable the clubs become better and stronger.
Brilliant, yeah. And great to hear that it's had a home since then. And as you said, it's only kind of grown from then. Robin, I suppose you'll probably hold the title for most time given in the Clubs and Societies Office in WIT. Can you take us back to when you started and how long you were with us?
Is there a prize for that, Jack? I haven't received it. But I suppose back to my student days, I started in 1996, September 96, in the old WRTC. And my first involvement with Clubs and Societies was the big Clubs and Socks Day. I was held on campus and I signed up for a number of clubs that day. And it's amazing to think, as Colm said, there was no base for the Clubs and Socks. There was just people were running it and they were kind of running from their own office or from, they were members of staff in the college, but the club were the only club probably had their own sort of base. But I signed up for a few clubs and the soccer club in particular. And I remember because one of my old juvenile coaches, underage coach, Ned Sheen, was the manager of the soccer club in WRTC. So the first day of trials, turned up, delighted to see Ned. I knew Ned, so that was great. I was straight onto the team. That was happy days for me. But from continuing as a student then, I suppose I do remember that the office opening up and I was definitely getting more involved with the kind of, you know, as other students were as well, you know, getting involved with running the different clubs and socks. And I started Recman. I started off a business in 96 and I took a year out and I came back in 98 then in Recman. And we, you know, the Recman students had a real hands-on role with the different clubs. And I remember, you know, Colm was in the office and Hazel Malloy was working with Colm and they had a number of different students working at the time down the courtyard. But it was super. It was so well organized. It was fantastic to have that hub, that area that you could go in, you could find out your details. And I suppose it took on from there. I graduated in 2002. I got a job in the Club and Socks office. I moved into a different role in the college in 2004. So that started my time in the office formally as a member of staff. So I had been in and out as a student over the years. But so from 2004 up to February 2017, I was working in the Club and Socks office. And as you know yourself, Jack, every day is different. It's just the work. The people you meet, challenges every day, every day is different. But it's a super environment and great to see. But I always found the students are doing their best for their club, for their society, for their fellow students and for the college itself. So it's just, it was a great thrill for me and great privilege to be involved in that.
Yeah, it's great to hear, even just from talking to you guys and even talking to Connor and the other guys who have been involved as well. It seems to be this constant students in involvement, and then that student involvement might lead to employment after that, if that's what the students are after. So it's great to see that kind of progression all the time. Sheila, of course, you'd be well known for your work in the business school in WIT, but of course you've been heavily involved in clubs in WIT also, most notably at the GA club. How long have you been involved with WIT GA?
Thanks, Jack. I arrived in October 1988, so a long time ago, to work in the business school. And I suppose within a couple of days of starting work there, I remember being approached. I can see the corridor where Colm and Eugene approached me, and they had known I was involved because, ironically, I was on a UCD team that had beaten Waterford the year before in a Division 1 final.
Don't mention the war, Sheila.
Don't mention the war.
You were scouted early.
I'd say it was easy to get involved because both the guys were so enthusiastic, and look, I suppose from seeing around the college, the club was so integrated across the codes, you know, the male and female codes. So that stage, you know, got involved and, you know, in that first year, got them to enter. We entered a freshers competition, which we won with some real good talent. I remember Mairead Toomey from Clare was in, Anna Fogarty, Marion O'Leary, you know, students like that. We were competing in Division 2 league. But then, you know, I went on to the third level committee and pushed to get Waterford into a championship, and at that time the Purcell Cup was the Division 2 championship, so we entered that in 89, got beaten in the final but won it then in 92 and 93, and that paved the way then into opening up into Ashburn in 94, and from there on in. But yeah, look, it was great involvement, I suppose, on the field, and then, you know, I got involved in the club too as a treasurer in the early 90s.
Brilliant, yeah. And of course, look, there was so many high points, as you said. You went on to Ashburn, and the rest is history there. It can only be described, I suppose, as a golden age since then. Can you choose one particular highlight that stood out for you, or is it just a total memory of success there?
Yeah, I suppose there was many highlights. You'd often think about the Purcell Cup win in 1990 in Dublin, and that was tremendous. But I suppose the Ashburn win in 1999, and I'm delighted that Colm is here too, because he was coach on the team. And that was really special for a number of reasons. We had been defeated in 98. We were the first, say, non-university to win it. And it was also the first time of the 15-a-side. Now, I know many of you younger people would think, my God, what was that? Because I remember we'd been beaten, as I said, in 98, and we played the final. We actually had hosted it up in Walsh Park. And I remember Michelle Fenley was in goal, and she was poking out the ball. And the ball, I remember I was cursing these small goals because the ball was actually going wide. But yeah, that 99 win was really special in Limerick, and tremendous. And it was a golden era as well, because the hurlers had won, I know, Division 1 football. The ladies football had won a league title, and fresher football had done well in that year as well.
So. That's right, Sheila. 98-99, that was my first year rec, man. And it was just, it was an unbelievable year of success. The boys won the Fitzgibbon, the girls won the Ashburn, and then the ladies football, Division 1, the men's football. The soccer involved the soccer team that year, and we won the double. The Premier team won the cup, and I was playing on the second team. I was a sub on the Premier team, and we won the second team, won the cup as well. We were cleaning up, you know. It was just an amazing time.
And it was a small enough place too, in terms of that everybody knew everybody, because we were all at the one campus, and you know, everybody was kind of at that time was sportsmen, and was so many firsts, because WIT only really became organized in all those sports. Like I remember when I became the development officer, really all we had was two hurling teams and one football team. And, you know, ladies football and camogie, it was non-existent at the time until we started trying to get it going. And before we know it, you know, the likes of Rosie Donnelly and a few, within 2 or 3 years, they were league champions. And it just showed people in the college were mad for sport once it was organized. And it was the same with the camogie. They went from, you know, having a team in, you know, 87 to winning Purcell Cup maybe 3 years later, and as Sheila says, compete with the likes of UCD. And I remember that day, Sheila, when UCD came down and they looked at the backfield of Mount Sinai and says, we're not playing any league final here. We're used to better standards than this. So we knew then if we got Sheila on our side when we saw she was coming to WIT, she'd improve her own standards as well. Like, but yeah, it's amazing
You omitted to say, Colm, that there were no nets, kind of a minimum requirement in those days. But I remember that.
Remember that
trip, and the train had broken down. We were coming down the train to Water, and we were saying, "Where is this place?" I mean, we were like, you know, and the train had broken down, so the match had to be delayed. So there were no mobile phones to ring ahead. It was interesting.
And Danny Bow, it's
different times altogether.
Good times.
Just look, brings me on to my next point. Robin, we might come to you first on this, but between your time as a student or in the office, would you have a particular highlight yourself?
I think that first year I was in rec, 98-99, was as a student anyway, that was an unbelievable year, because we, as Colm said, the college was small, and you knew everyone. Like you knew everyone from, you're involved in sport, you knew all the lads, the basketball team, the ladies soccer team, you knew, like, everyone kind of mixed so well. And Recman was the sports course, you know, was the sports course in Ireland at the time, to be honest. So we had a lot of talent in 4 or 5 years of Recman. And obviously we had the other courses, the business and the engineering, etc. But a lot of our players came from the Recman courses. And as a student, definitely that year, because it was the people you were in the same sitting down with, or class you did it go to. But they were winning all around them, and we were just, you know, it's just a great sense of pride in the college that we were beating UCD and we were beating UCC and etc. And we kind of swept the board. I know I mentioned the ladies soccer did fantastic that year as well. I think they won the Intervarsity and the Division, the Premier League as well. It just seemed to be the basketball girls, the men's basketball.
The ladies rugby.
Unbelievable year, Colm. You'll probably something that sticks out for you as the officer at the time.
Yeah, as I said, you mentioned it all there. Yeah, the girls going to InterVarsity, the ladies soccer and winning it, you know, it was unheard of. The ladies rugby were flying it at the time. And it just every sport, anytime they put on a WIT jersey, they were wondering what was going on because we just seemed to be producing winning teams and everybody was sports mad in the campus. You know, it was very small. We had no arena at the time, no great facilities. And even at the start, we used to be doing a small bit of training up where the accommodation block is behind that pitch. And luckily enough, we developed and went down and got the facilities in Waterford Crystal, which is only across the road. Like, so it wasn't a big trek for any student just to, you know, jump the fence and up into Waterford Crystal. And so, yeah, things moved on. But it was, yeah, we looked to be a sports college more than an academic college during those years, and great memories. But yeah, the WIT have expanded so much, you know, and, you know, we're heading to be a university shortly, and you can see the academic side has grown hugely. And but yeah, sport, maybe we're not as dominant now as we used to be. So yeah, that's why probably looking back, there were great times for us.
Colm, am I right in saying you returned to college while working as the sports officer to Winifred?
Working, even, you know. Again.
There must be some kind of rules there against that.
No, I came back to do a full-time degree course in recreation and leisure. And I remember I was married at the time and had a young child along the way, so I couldn't afford not to work. And I remember the students I was with, you know, they'd be heading back off to the library and I'd be racing over to the sports hall and trying to get in my hours, you know, to try and get some kind of a wage at the end of the year. But yeah, I managed to tug out for the hurlers that year because when I had been involved with WIT playing hurling, you know, we had won the Division One league title in 86 and 87. We were beating all the big colleges, UCC, UCD, you know, it was in a HE then at that time. And we were always wondering, why don't they allow us into the other competition? But we used to win our own competition as well. So we go on beating for a year or two. And I think the year I left, 88, was the first year that they actually allowed WIT into Fitzgibbon. So I actually missed out by a year. And it was a hard learning curve for us. It took us 3 or 4 years to find our feet. But when we finally did get that win and Paddy Fanning captained the team to bring the cup over the bridge in 92, it was just an unbelievable feeling that we've, you know, we've reached the top in hurling because nobody ever thought the RTCs at the time would be able to compete with the universities, and a lot of them didn't want to see us in it. They didn't want the competition downgraded. It was a university's competition only. So we were delighted that the GA saw, you know, were able to open the doors for us. And yeah, so when I got the chance, I was 31 at this stage, but when I got a chance to come back in 95, you know, I'd give Paddy a few pounds and he made me captain of the team. So I was delighted. And, you know, we had very good players there. You know, PJ Delaney, Tommy Dunn, Peter Barry, Fergus McCormack, you know, good lads that were there. And they'd been beaten the year before in the Fitzgibbon final. And I remember we had a home game against UCC above in Mount Sion. And, you know, we've been so often against them as, you know, in the Division One League when they used to be playing them and then trying to beat them in the Fitzgibbon Cup or whatever. And then for me to actually put on a Waterford jersey and to see the crest, you know, the skull and bone coming up, I was delighted to be out in the field and having a crack at the young fellas. Like, they were young fellas because, as I said, I was 31. And we beat them by a pint. I think it was 11 pints to 1-7. So it was a very tight game.
Classic.
Yeah. And so then that took us to the final. And yeah, I think we won the final very well then. And young UCD team and kind of beat them out the gate 3-15 from what I remember. So it was huge just to be able to do that. And then obviously then as captain I managed to get the cup, and it would have been something that I thought would have passed me by when when 88 we weren't allowed into Fitzgibbon. So I was just so happy to get back and do it when I did and have the energy to do it with the younger lads. So yeah, special moment for me.
Brilliant opportunity, yeah. Robin, just to switch it then, like obviously I've been in the office from 2018, just a few short years in comparison to the time you spent there, but I've even noticed some really large scale changes. During your time, did you notice any big changes throughout that, even in the students and their interest in kind of the clubs and societies that came and went?
Well, I suppose there's a few things, Jack. I suppose one thing is we changed the colour of our gear. Like that was
green and gold. Yeah.
We were the old green and gold, and then we went more kind of like the Waterford, WIT maybe rebranded. We went blue, white, and red, and probably more reflects Waterford. And that was a big thing to start off with. But I suppose just semesterization's made a huge difference. I think the fact that when I was in college that you could put kind of concentrate on sport, I could concentrate on a lot of your extracurricular activities for a large part of the college year, as long as you're tipping away on your studies. But with the semesterization, I suppose everything is full on for those 12 blocks of 12 weeks. And it definitely, at the start of the semesterization, definitely put a big squeeze on the sports clubs. The students themselves were under that bit more pressure in terms of committing to training and going away on a Wednesday afternoon, could be gone for the full day for away match and things like that. But that did make a difference. But I suppose we had to adapt. So we looked into playing matches in the evening time. We were looking at venues with floodlights, and we had to try make more flexible arrangements. You know, if we're going to Tralee, we try and play them halfway, things like that. You have to be practical. You have to try and get your best players out on the field in terms of your sports team. So that's definitely, that was, semesterization made a big difference. But I think the ethos of maybe the student taking on the role of running a club, that's certainly kind of, it's more responsibility these days are on your own shoulders, Jack, in terms of getting the administration right for the different clubs. Back in our day, the students were nearly had not full ownership, but we had to work within the guidelines that Colm and Hazel and the offices had set out. But we were more hands on, I suppose. We were definitely more involved in terms of fundraising and day-to-day running the clubs. We were the ones getting the fixtures. We were informing the office of the fixtures in some cases, in terms of, but I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. You always have your students who are fantastic students, have a keen interest in their club or society. I just feel that maybe over the last maybe 10 years, that's drifted a little bit, but not to say we don't have great individuals at the moment, but we probably had a little bit more of a spread in terms of the students and their commitment to clubs and societies. They probably had a bit more time, probably just more that they were that bit more inclined to get stuck in and try different things and boost their CVs and stuff, because it's a huge part of their involvement as a student in the college. Getting involved in clubs and societies definitely has a positive effect on their job prospects, enhancing their CV as they go along in the future. But they're definitely things. I suppose the facilities then, that was the major thing, Jack. These were the major thing. We were big borrowing and stealing pitches, training areas. Sheila and Colm are laughing, but they were begging and borrowing more than most. But we were very lucky to have great relationships with outside with the clubs in the area. But to have our own home and to have a standard, I think we set the standard at our level. The arena is absolutely top class. That's to have that as our own home is definitely, I suppose the students now don't know how good they had it. But when we were running around the Wharf of Crystal with one light or with the rain, 10 teams sharing the one training area, you had to be off by a certain because the rugby club were coming on to train under the lights. That was a learning experience itself. But I wouldn't change it for the world. But
Robin, that was a luxury. That was a luxury, Robin, because as I said, when I was a student, we used to train at the back where the accommodation was. You used to have a pitch there as such, and you'd be trying to knock the seagulls off it and send them back to Tramore to sow wet. But as I said, it wasn't as organised then, there wasn't as many teams. But yeah, the facilities have definitely made an improvement in terms of the students.
Brilliant. Yeah, we'll come back to the facilities just in a while. But Sheila, we mentioned kind of the golden era and kind of just the big wins that we had throughout the kind of codes of the GA club. But do you think there is a single secret behind the success over that time, or can you single it down to one thing, or is it just a number of things together?
I suppose it is a number of things, really. I mean, look, I think Colm touched on there, he was the first development officer. So that was innovative, and it was the first college to do that back in 1987. And then, you know, and that was, that did definitely give GAA a huge springboard, a huge amount of support and at the time. And then I guess if you look at the, you know, the clubs and societies having their first formal home or formal office in 97, that was really significant as well. But I guess all that, you know, that link and group of human capital, if you like, between the students, the staff, the community, you know, I think the lads mentioned there about we having to look for other facilities, whether it was basketball or whether it was GAA, and like we had local clubs which were terrific to us. And also we had great support at the top. Paddy Downey, he was registrar at the time. He was really good. And look, you could go to him if there was issues or challenges. I remember there was a very talented girl that I had, Karen Shinkins. And she was, you know, like an Olympic athlete. And she had...
Olympian.
And she, I remember she was studying business. And look, she was going to the States for some big championship. And to be fair to Paddy, I remember approaching him and, you know, they gave her a small sum or a small modest contribution. And that was all the era before scholarships. So I suppose it was all that, you know, buy-in from everybody from the top down. And look, we had great support too, like in terms like people Mairead in the canteen, you know, and her team, like food, you know, all those things all fitted. And colleges coming were always very well looked after in Waterford. You know, we were one of the, probably the first colleges, if teams came, they got food, whereas that wasn't the norm when you went to other places.
It's good to have that buy-in across the campus. And, and look, I think we'll bring it back to the scholarship program again. But just quickly, just on the events, I suppose, like we've had some fantastic events. I think holding the Fitzgibbon, I think I talked to Mick Evans on it the first year of the arena. And it was a kind of a flurry to get everything together, but it came together in the end. And even the GAA World Games, is there an event that sticks out for you as brilliant over that time?
I suppose we were the first to bring in the education award or the scholarships back in 96-97, and that was in conjunction with Munster. I remember Eugene had instigated that, and that stood out. I mean, people like Catherine Walsh, were Connor Power, you know, great, you know, GAA people. So that stood out to me as kind of, again, a bit of a landmark occasion, and it was the first time we saw that paved the way, if you like, to scholarships. But yeah, as long as, you know, we hosted a number of competitions and they were always great.
Brilliant, yeah, absolutely. Just come back to the scholarship. So, Colm, you're involved at the minute still as the chairman of the sports scholarship program, but can you tell us a little bit of how the program started and what it was like in the early days?
Yeah, as I said, it was slow enough to start to develop. We just felt we were at a disadvantage sometimes when we looked at the bigger colleges. Like we were up in all the big competitions in the early years. We were in the Sigerson as well as the Fitzgibbon as well as the Ashbourne, and then in the top competitions for the ladies soccer, the rugby, you know, there were so many that we were actually competing well, and we just felt we needed to try and keep the athletes coming to WIT and making them look, you know, this could be their first choice. And we felt that if we didn't introduce some kind of scholarship and offer something for the top students, you know, Sheila mentioned someone like Karen Shinkins, who was a European semi-finalist as well, you know, so we wanted the calibre of those students, because when you have someone like that coming to a college, you know, it makes other people look out and kind of say, I wouldn't mind going there to see what they have. And so I remember going to Paddy Downey when I was a club society's officer, and it was the capitation fund, the money that they give to all the clubs, that we said we'd put aside 10,000 towards a scholarship and give 10 1,000-pound scholarships. And really, I suppose that was the start of it, in terms of we'd ask students, these would be advertised by the marketing office and by the club societies, and we put it out there, and it was open to all sports. And that's where it kind of took on. It was kind of haphazard for the first couple of years, and trying to get up the contracts for the students and what service we could offer them. And, you know, and we were gradually building on it. And then it became a bit more professional to where it is now, in terms of all the support services that are being offered to scholarship students. But yeah, initially we just felt we needed it to compete with the bigger teams and the bigger colleges and to attract the best, even though we had been doing well. But we just felt if we didn't do that, we could experience a slide in some of the top sports students coming to WIT.
Yeah. I'll open this to you and Robin, because I know you would have been involved over the years as well, but who are some of the kind of bigger names, I suppose, down through the years, who you would have interviewed and who attended WIT? through the scholarship program. I know we had Sam Bennett, who's obviously done very well lately. I know he didn't last too long because he actually got his professional contract, but just people like that over the years.
Yeah, we'd be lucky, Jack, I suppose, that Sam, you just took the words out of my mouth, that he was one of the students. He was certainly at a different level to what, you know, to what we had probably experienced before. Maybe we had, as Sheila said, Karen Shankins now, but that was before the scholarship system was in place. But I suppose if you look at the GA side of things, we had TJ Reid or Austin Gleese and, you know, Michael Brick Welsh, Kevin Morn. They'd be four massive names in hurling and still are, you know. Maybe in terms of the Camogie, you'd have Trish Jackman or Denise Gall. And I know at one stage we brought in maybe four or five, six top-class Kilkenny girls at the one time. And it really kick-started that kind of that super era we had with, you know, maybe was it Sheila, no, for an effort, was it five in a row, Sheila?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, that was...
2009, yeah.
Involved, you know, so that was unbelievable at the time, you know, and it's, I know we're always striving to get back there, but those players coming in, the top-class players, they raise the standard, and but definitely, I'm thinking maybe soccer, I'm thinking like a chap like John Frost, he would have been come back as a mature student. John was a brilliant character. He's, you know, he's a huge amount of league appearances in the League of Ireland for different clubs.
Captain Waterford United at the time.
Waterford United, but, you know, he'd be huge connection with Waterford. But he came in as a mature student doing social care. And the effect he had with the lads, he really galvanised the soccer team at the time. He was proud to be part of the WIT. And he had done it all in terms of soccer, underage international and, you know, lots of achievements under his belt. But, you know, guys like that or people like that, if they're willing to put the hard work in, and the rest of the students, you know, it might be at that top level, if they can see, you know, they're the inspiration, I suppose. But they're just some people off the top of my head now. You threw it at us there, Jack. But I might have a few more if you can remember.
Yeah, digging in the memory bank, yeah. It looked brilliant, and you can see that the scholarship programme is continuing to improve all the time with people like Phil Healy and Jack Prendergast and all these guys who are involved, Aoife Doyle, and it's continuing.
Your own brother? That high,
yeah, of course, yeah, trying to get the high
real,
level
the
student.
The real talent
all the
in
time.
The family, yeah.
We won't mention the war. Robin, again, we'll bring it back to just like, obviously we spoke about Carriganore earlier and the sports campus as it was originally known first and that coming into the WIT Arena. How big addition to clubs and socks was that at the time? I know you mentioned kind of using different pitches around, and I know talking to Conor Phelan, he was saying you might go to see the ladies footballers play or train in De La Salle, and then you're up to see the guys hurling in Mount Sion and down to see maybe the Camogie team training in St. Saviour's or whatever it might have been.
Well, we had, I suppose, the facilities coming in. First of all, we had control over when we could train, what day the matches could be played at. You know, we were in control of that. Before that, I suppose, if you're looking at other clubs and other facilities, you were trying to fit things in. So first and foremost, to have that control and to be able to allow the girls wanted to train, ladies soccer wanted to train at 8 o'clock in the morning, we had the facility to do it. Or if they want, you know, if there was a match at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we knew we definitely could go ahead with the amount of pitches and the facilities we had. But the quality, I suppose, the quality of the facilities coming on board was a huge sense of pride for all of us at the time. Anyone involved with the college, but particularly maybe with the sporting side of it, that we had, not only did we have our own home, but we had something that we could mark against any other college in the country, you know, across the world, I suppose, you know, that. And so to have our own home and to have the level it came in at, you know, it was huge foresight, huge amount of work went in by loads of people over a long number of years. But when it finally came true and the matches started to play, our team started to go out there, the indoor arena, I suppose, we don't want, you know, it's been such a massive, massive addition, you know, for our clubs as well, for our basketball, our badminton, our volleyball, for loads of different things that we can hold and host. It was just it was just amazing. And, you know, getting them in and out, organising the shuttle bus, to see the bus full at 5:30 and everyone teaming, getting togged out and getting ready for training 6:15 or whatever. It was just, it's a great hope. It's great to be out there, you know, on an evening when WIT teams are there. When it started, it was just a huge sense of pride for us. And I suppose that was it, to have our own facilities, to be in control of the situation, but the standard of the facilities is just massive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Colm and Robin, I suppose, from a kind of a sports and society's point of view, something that we always enjoy, definitely in my time in the office, is the less common sports and societies that would have come in that kind of bring something different to the table. And as you said, Robin, just something different every day. Are there a couple that stood out for you during your time?
One of the clubs we had was a sailing club, which is unusual. And at the time, we had a request in from, you know, and to be fair to Paddy Down, he had no problems supporting clubs once they could back it up. But we had a lecture call of Shotnessy involved. And we actually, over the couple of years, we bought 6 or 7 laser two boats for them to compete. And they were competing all over Ireland in these. It was a very, very successful period. And that was unusual. And at one stage, we were out when we got Carriganore, those early years, we were out sussing out whether we could afford to put a platoon out just over that new bridge that was developed there. And I remember being out there with Eamon and we checking it out to see the river, and he went out with his boat. But that's how progressive at the time they were trying to be. We had a rowing club as well that had 7 or 8 boats. But, you know, I suppose maybe it was, as Robin's comments, semesterization came in, students came under more difficulty, and it just, these clubs seemed to die away. But, you know, I remember the Gaming Society coming to us in the early years, and I know when I'm bringing the kids into one of the classrooms, I can still see all their gear there, and the Gaming Society is still going, and, you know, they seem to have great fun in that. And it was others, you know, every week, every second week, there used to be a busload going off to Kiltork and racing track, racing each other, and they have their own Mondelli Championship, and it was different. You know, we had horse racing groups, and we had the Monty Python appreciation group, and they just get together and they watch Monty Python videos. And you know, and some of the, even back, you know, when it was a quieter place, you know, the likes of the Business Ball, there could be 700 or 800 at these. You couldn't get a ticket, the Ardrí was the only place that could host such a huge. I think they could take in maybe 650, 700 or something. But yeah, it's different times were just, and this, as we said before, semesterization, where students could maybe put their head down the week before the exams and try and study for the final. Whereas now with semesterization, they are under a small bit more pressure. But yes, but as I say, clubs will come and go. And, but yeah, they always leave a mark. The students that are there are very passionate about it when they get involved in it. And sometimes it's just, they're not the people behind them then to keep that club going, and it kind of loses its way then over 2 or 3 years and it's forgotten about.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Sheila, I might start with you on this one, but I'll open it up to the rest of you as it works through. But obviously, like, you guys were like there for a number of years, but can you remember some of the staff who've been there during your time that might not be on the call at the minute who you saw that put in Trojan work for the sports clubs during their time?
Yeah, I suppose I might start with the development officers. I suppose, you know, would have been more familiar with them and the GA, and that would people like Colm, Parig Fanning, Damien Young, Connor Power, Gerard Canan, Owen Bernock, to name but a few. And these would have done fantastic work. And then I suppose we have Katie at the moment, which is, you know, she's a terrific worker. And then I think of other staff like Gerry O'Connell, the late Eddie Fowler, you know, Lizzie Kent, Kate, Jackie, you know, Eugene Inchinade did huge work. And Eamon Dalton, I can remember Eamon. Eamon gave us a fantastic help in the Camogie back in 98, 99, around that time. But look, there's a lot of people I know, Neil O'Sullivan and the good Kerry man Paul, you know, they've done good work as well. It's a lot of people. And I mentioned Mairead and her team in the canteen, you know, to help him, you know, we're getting food, etc., for all the different groups. So there's very many different people, in, as well as the registrar. I mentioned Paddy Downey there, and in more recent times, then you know people like Elaine Sheridan, the financial controller. She was very supportive, and her predecessor as well, a good Donegal man. But yeah, look, they were some of the key people, and as I said, it was like a lot of people to help rotate the wheel, and would have done a lot of work.
Yeah, it's great to see. Like, obviously, there's been great staff, like Colm and Robin, who've worked directly in the sports office. But even like yourself, and as you mentioned, like Mairead and the other guys who didn't actually directly work in the sports office, but obviously had a huge hand in how it kind of developed over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Finally, then, Brandon and Sheila.
Yeah, I've omitted to mention Robin, and Robin was always very calm. You know, you go to clubs and societies and you could be frazzled looking for something or other. Colm, or Robin was so calm and always very...
I learned that from Colm. He passed that on to me. But just a couple of staff members, you know, just wanted to throw a few more names out there. Colm Tynum, Ken Deavy, Jerry Fitzpatrick was...
Oh, yeah, Jerry, yeah.
...clubs over the years. And I suppose two guys that I would have been involved with, my direct involvement with the soccer club when I was a student, Ned Sheen and Tommy Kelly, they were two fantastic people, and the soccer club was very prominent at the third level at that time. They were winning probably a cup every year or so. So, you know, and it's a pity there's not as many members of staff with direct involvement in club societies anymore. Signed of the times maybe, but you know, it's having staff members involved keeps the thing going, keeps a particular club or society going. Gives it a good structure. There's a lot of great people around the college with lots to offer. So, for you know, maybe next year, going forward, we do get that kind of more that staff buy-in again into the clubs and socks.
Mm-hmm. And I forgot to mention there. Sorry, guys, Connor Phelan, who was just terrific. You know, a development officer, and you know he still involved. He's chairman of the club, and of course the Jacobs, who did both great work on and off the field, both Ursula and
Adam Roach in the Dome.
Yeah, and Alan Roach in the Dome as well. But all of those people.
Football, yeah.
Kevin Ryan, yeah. And Kevin is retired now. And I mean, I mentioned the Jacobs, both as students, you know, as staff, hugely influential and great workers.
Yeah, that's great. As I mentioned earlier, just that student presence in the office, like even your Katie's and your Tom Grinsels and guys who would have given a helping hand along the way, or your Tommy Kavanaghs and these guys, and then they end up kind of falling into a role there, it just kind of works that way. So brilliant, yeah. Look, lads, last finally, I just kind of want to look towards the future. Obviously, with the potential merger coming up between Waterford IT and IT Carlow in the next 12 months, it's an entire exciting time for sports and societies across both institutions. I'm not sure if you're actually aware, but we are going to be the largest array of sporting facilities for any university or institution in the country when you actually bring together the WIT Arena and their new sports campus. We might come to you first on this, Colm. Where would you like to see the potential merger bring sports and societies in the new TUSEI?
Yeah, it's hard to get your head around it. You know, as you said, we're going to become the biggest college with huge facilities. And, I don't know what way the governing bodies will say. Will they say only one team is allowed to represent you in, whether it is Ashbourne, Fitzgibbon, Sigerson? And if that's the case, it will be difficult to possibly bring students together, and because you know obviously students will have to go from one campus to the other to train, and then you know it's like two clubs joining up. You know, how many players from one club get on the team and many players from the other club join, and it's always a bit of controversy. So yeah, there's a lot to be kind of worked on in terms of, but I can still see, you know, all the regional teams and the likes of Cooside, the small, you know, that you'll still be representing your local college in the smaller competitions, and that it won't be all about, you know, the one major sport that they play. So once they're able to cater for all the students, and as I said, with the facilities that the arena have and the new facilities that are coming on board with Carlow IT, you know, they're one for nothing really, and at whatever level they want to play at, there's going to be a pathway for them, which is great. So like between the two colleges, they can be competing at the highest level, and then I would hope then at the other levels where students want to play, if just for a bit of sport, a bit of recreation, that'll be always there for them, and there won't be the hassle or the pressure of saying, well, you have to go down to Carlow to play this sport, or you have to go somewhere else, that if, you know, with the facilities that we have, be able to play them and be able to play them recreationally. And look, as I said, there's a lot to be discussed yet, but we can only get stronger, that's for sure, in terms of joining up with a college like Carlow.
Again, third level sport is a kind of, it's for everyone, you know. As Colm hit the nail on the head, we have our lead sport, and my hope was that we would, you know, we'd be back, whatever brand, whatever umbrella we come under, that WIT, and that our students here on this campus are, you know, we're competing at the elite level and we're back in competition for the top prizes. But we can't lose track that there's majority of our students are not elite, that they're there to themselves. They're there to make friends and to boost, you know, to boost their time, their college time. that I suppose we pride ourselves on our sort of family environment, or, you know, that the fact that we kind of look after, we look after all our students regardless of ability, and that there's something there for everybody, you know. I hope we don't lose sight of that. I'm sure we won't, but you know, the people that are involved, there's great people in Carlow as well as ourselves, like Donal McNally, and he's done a great job there following on from legend in Carmel. Carmel, who was there with Carlow for donkey's years before and done great work. Yeah. That we're back competing at the top, no matter whatever guys our teams are competing under, but that we also can cater for the little guy, the little fella like myself. The ordinary Joe Soap, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think even like we've been on particular working groups with the guys from Carlow and Donal, and the guys in Carmel is involved as well. And in fairness, it's definitely paramount for us, and it's definitely paramount for them. But participation is always key for college sport. I think, as I said there, you have your elite people, but your elite performance could only make up 20% of your sport and societies, you know, even less. So most people are there to enjoy it. Most people are there to make friends, and that's what it's all about. Absolutely. So look, that concludes our podcast for today. A brilliant discussion. We were delighted to welcome in our guests. No doubt we could have kept them here chatting all day. I'd like to thank my guests for taking the time out of their days to speak with us. And next up, more in part 2. Thanks very much.